Okay, now that the guys are no longer listening. Oh my God. Who actually remembers that ridiculous TV commercial from the 90s? Oh my God, I remember it. And every time it came on, I was rolling my eyes and turning the channel. My grandparents lived in Chicago, and during one of my visits, watching TV with them, a Vagisil commercial came on. My poor grandmother was very upset, muttering how ridiculous it was, adding that we never see any commercials for jock itch. I would say that was probably the most vulgar thing I'd ever heard come out of my grandmother's mouth. Of course, to most of us, this would not be remotely considered vulgar. I was so close to my grandma Jean. She passed when I was 18, and I was a mess. Honestly, I still think of her and break into tears sometimes. I loved her, but I digress. I think the first time that I ever had a yeast infection, I was 14. 80s latchkey kids, we are tough. I would take myself to doctor's appointments. I always followed instructions from what adults would tell me what to do. I'll unpack that later, maybe on a future episode with a psychotherapist. Well, I ended up getting a pap smear. Imagine being a 14-year-old, a virgin, underage, no parent with you at the doctor's office, and you're told to remove your clothes and put your feet up in stirrups. Thank God it was a female doctor. Still, emotionally scarred though. Ugh. Anyway, a couple days later, I get a phone call from the doctor's office saying that there was a prescription being sent to the pharmacy for me. I don't remember actually knowing why. I mean, let's be honest, that was a few years ago. So maybe they told me, but all I remember was calling my mother at work and asking her to pick up my prescription on her way home. Well, she gets home and she hands me a prescription bag and asks if there's anything that I wanted to discuss with her. The bag was so fucking big, it was like I was shoes in there or something. Anyway, I said no. I also had no idea what the fuck was in the bag. So I go upstairs to my room, open up the prescription, and it's a huge box with this little tiny oval vaginal suppository that looks basically like a mini white Easter egg. You're welcome if I just ruined white Easter eggs for you. Also, I do not recommend you shove Easter eggs up your hoo-ha. It's not like Heron's yogurt tampons. Anyway, so I did that because that's what the instruction said in the box, and an adult told me to do it. I mean, I did have a yeast infection. I mean, so fucked up on so many levels. I remember feeling so embarrassed, thinking my mother is going to think that I'm sleeping around or something, which is funny because, as I mentioned, I hadn't had sex yet. And although yeast infections can be sexually transmitted, it's not necessarily why you get them. I was highly sensitive to body soaps and bubble baths, and I remember taking Fa bubble baths. Do you remember that? Do you remember Fa? Ugh, Lasai. When I did start having sex, there was a guy that I was dating who I'm pretty sure would dose his twig and berries with Dracar Noir. Remember that from the 80s? Anyway, almost every single time we had sex, I would get a yeast infection. Yes, it was always a yeast infection, but I certainly would never shame anyone who had a STI. I remember going with a friend to the emergency department. She had chlamydia. We were both underage on a school day, chillin' in the Cambridge Hospital ER. Also, that's not really a bad thing, you know, supporting a friend and having your privacy protected. It was also not the 18-hour wait that we see today. Anyway, I keep digressing. And I hope I'm using that word correctly. Anyway, fun fact, you can be allergic to semen. And I don't mean sailors. I mean, whatever floats your boat. But anyway, so the cosmos really could have been telling me to stay away from this player. Or maybe I was allergic to him. Or maybe the other women that he was sleeping with had yeast infections that he just kept passing them around to everybody. I mean, he did say that I was the only one, but people lie. I know. Shocker. I just wanted to take a little moment here and just shout out to my kids and their friends and to my husband for listening to my podcast. Thank you. I really appreciate the support. Please give me 5 stars. Anyway, because nobody really explained to me what a yeast infection was, I was always so embarrassed. I never went to the doctor until it was really absolutely necessary. I remember, and you're going to be horrified when you hear this, but I remember literally grabbing medicinal peroxide, tossing my legs up in the air, and dumping peroxide to essentially numb my vagina to not feel the aggravation of a really horrible yeast infection. Now, if you look on the peroxide bottle's warning label, it says, do not use on mucous membranes, which I believe includes your vajayjay. I finally went to the doctor, who also told me to never put peroxide there ever again, and got a prescription. Fast forward to living in Singapore, and after years of being yeast-free, I got one. They don't sell the medication over the counter there, which is really unfortunate because if you have a yeast infection as a woman, you fucking know what it is. Anyway, so I called the doctor's office and asked if they could call in a prescription for me. I was told that they're not allowed to do that there and that it's mandatory that I come in. The patriarchy, hard at work, so dumb. Anyway, I go into the small admin waiting room combo area, and the nurse hands me a urine sample jar, and I'm like, no, I'm not here for that. And she says in a normal voice that everyone can hear in the waiting room, "Oh, I thought you were here because you have a yeast infection." I said to her in the exact same voice with, like, added sarcasm, gesturing to those around me, "Oh, yes, I am here for a yeast infection medication, but maybe perhaps you need to say it a bit louder because this man over here with his toddler didn't quite hear you. And this teenage boy sitting here with his mom also didn't hear that I'm here because I have a fucking yeast infection." A yeast infection is not a urinary tract infection. Like, I don't understand why some doctors insist on having urine samples. But anyway, whatever. Didn't go to medical school. So I go years and years without having another yeast infection until recently. I'm starting to get them way too frequently. Thank God here in Toronto, you can just go and buy the medication over the counter. I might actually get stocks in Kynestin. I consulted Dr. Google because even though I do like my GP, I'm so tired of going to doctors. According to Dr. Google, many women in perimenopause and menopause start seeing a resurgence in yeast infections. Oh my God, yay. But don't worry, I'm staying away from the medicinal peroxide. Actually, this morning before I started recording this, I did have a menopause consultation with my menopause doctor, and I asked her about it. And she said that yes, it's usually UTIs that women start seeing a kind of increase when they're going through perimenopause and menopause because of the drop in estrogen. But she did say that it also can be yeast infection. So, yay me. Also, you know what else is happening? My hair is getting so greasy. The hair on my head, the other hair, I've developed some sort of Chelsea, the punk rock cut where it's bald in the middle with a ring of hair. According to a dermatologist I went to, it could be a form of alopecia or hair loss from aging down there, like the vagina area, the pubic area. I swear perimenopause is exactly the same as puberty, but in reverse. I mean, honestly, if you look at the quote unquote symptoms, they're basically the same. What a fucking struggle. Welcome to the fuck you 50s.
Welcome to the Fuck You 50s, the podcast for women who refuse to tolerate the bullshit anymore. This is real talk, real stories, and a long overdue reality check. I'm your host, Andrea Claire, and this podcast is the filter-free voice you've been waiting for, with a dose of F-bombs. The Fuck You 50s. Unfiltered, unapologetic, and undeniably needed.
My guest today is Allison Miller, who is a mental health counselor with a deep understanding of the mental health challenges women face at different stages of life. She emphasizes the importance of understanding the biological factors that influence behavior while promoting acceptance, self-compassion, and empowerment in her approach. Her client base is diverse, but she frequently engages in discussions with friends about the unique mental health issues women encounter, drawing on her own experiences as a woman in her 50s. Allison offers this perspective: empowerment, kindness, self-compassion, and how wonderful it is to be in your 50s and not be noticed, not on the radar, and therefore able to do whatever you want while ignoring others' expectations. My take on that is it's almost like choosing to embrace the age of the invisibility cloak, wearing it as a superpower. I find that to be a little bit of an aha moment where our age group tends to struggle with invisibility. Flipping that perspective switch just might offer some solace. I clearly am not the type that wants to remain under an invisibility cloak, but that's where conversations like this offer relatable alternatives to anyone that's listening. There are no wrong answers. It's what works best for you. Please join me as I chat with Allison Miller. Welcome to the Fuck You 50s. Sorry, it like literally is like 6 a.m. So I'm still on my first coffee. Anyway, okay. So Allison and I know each other from Singapore, and I was Allison's hairstylist. We met actually at the Singapore American School, right, Allison? That's where we met, right? It's so funny, is when I can't remember if somebody had recommended me to you to do your hair or if it was just me like chatting away. I don't, whenever I'm in a situation where I'm in like
you know, stuff for Zoe at school, or, you know, if it's not appropriate, I don't like pitching myself to people, because I don't want people to be like, oh my God, here she comes. She's going to say she's a hairstylist again, you know?
And I think too, that I was under the impression that you wouldn't take just an average Joe, which may well be an Australian saying and not a Canadian saying, but so it was not ever something I'd approached. But when I found out from others that you were happy to work with average Joes or Josephines, I decided to reach out and approach you. And that's sort of how the connection began, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And we do say average Joe here. So.
Okay. All right. Good.
Phew. Anyway, Allison, so sorry, jumping back. Please kind of explain to the audience, our listeners, your background.
So I think in terms of what's relevant to this episode of the podcast is I've completed a master's of counseling, and I've had a big interest for a very long time in mental health, and in not in particular, just mental health in general. And I think my background from work has not been in mental health, but was something I was always interested in, even, you know, post high school. And I kind of got talked out of it and went into banking and finance. And as I got older and started to see that I had, you know, a limited amount of time left in my work life and was going to soon be in a position where all the children had left home, I didn't want to be continuing to do a job that I found not necessarily very fulfilling. So I chose to go down the path of studying, and I took some time to research. Like, I knew I wanted to work with people. I knew I wanted to help people. I knew I wanted to support them, but I wasn't really sure how. So I did some research and came up with a master's of counseling, and it's been a very good decision.
Amazing. I find it fascinating when you were saying that you were talked out of it. And I'm very curious about that, because when I was getting into hair and makeup, so many people in my family tried to talk me out of it. And from that perspective, it was like, oh, how are you going to make a living? You know, it's just going to be an artist. Artists don't make any money. Like, are you sure it's what you want to do? You know? And then it wasn't until like years later when I ended up on TV, where a lot of these family members that were telling me I would never do anything, you know, and I wouldn't make any money, all of a sudden I'm on television, and they're like, I always knew you could make it.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it was a case of particularly my mother being concerned that, and I had some of these concerns as well, that I would take on everybody else's problems and I wouldn't be able to separate myself from those challenges, from those issues, and it would weigh me down and you know, be something that plagued on my mind. And maybe that's true. Maybe I didn't have the maturity in those days to be able to separate myself away. Now I find that I can be empathetic, listen and understand. And if I'm feeling challenged by what somebody's experiencing, actually happy to go away and research it and look for ways to help them. And it doesn't overwhelm me. I genuinely am interested and love to help and love to work with people and love to spend the time with them to help them through their challenges. So maybe I did need to wait this long. I don't know. And I'll never have that back again. So it's not like I can make a comparison. It's not that I regret that time and those learnings. It's just time for something different.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because from the other women that I've talked to, and of course, just over the years being a hairstylist and like speaking to clients and things, it just seems like this age that we're in, a lot of women kind of tend to do like a bit of a career pivot or something. And maybe it is kind of like dreams that you had when you were younger. And maybe that is like the confidence and, you know, it's like, here I am doing a podcast where, you know, I had this idea and Amy and I met and just kind of, it just kind of worked out and kind of thrust into it. But one of the other things that I've always wanted to do is to do Second City. And so they have Second City in Toronto, one in Chicago. A lot of comedians that end up on SNL have taken Second City. And I've always wanted to do their improv classes. So, and I've talked about it for years. And even lately, like I brought it up and my kids are like, Mom, you always talk about it. Why have you not done this yet? That'll be my next segue anyway. So I know I sent you this kind of list of questions, but we're not necessarily going to follow them, but I just wanted to kind of jumpstart into, I guess one of the big things is, from your knowledge, I guess from maybe even personal knowledge, but also your expertise, like hormonal changes, and the impact that it has on us, emotionally as we're going through perimenopause and menopause. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm not a physician, but essentially, you know, estrogen and progesterone for women are the two big hormones that, you know, gradually increase as we go through puberty and then sort of sit at a certain level. And then as we approach perimenopause and menopause, they start to drop off. And as they both drop off, you start to become a little more anxious, a little more irritable. It affects things like your ability to get a good night's sleep. It affects things like your ability to think clearly.
Right.
And those things obviously put added pressure on how you feel about yourself, because the way that you used to be able to function is not a way that you can function anymore. And you're not necessarily looking for it. You don't necessarily understand why. So I think that, you know, if I was to talk about me, I would notice that I would just be standing in a supermarket and all of a sudden feel overwhelmed by anxiety for no apparent reason. And this was actually at the time of COVID as well. So I was kind of questioning, is this because of COVID? Is this because of something else? Is there, what's going on? I've put it together now, and I think it was probably a little bit of a mix of both, but definitely more, I think, sitting on the, you know, going through hormonal shifts side of things, because it can just come out of the blue and be overwhelming. And this is where you get fluctuations in hormones of, you know, what cause, obviously, hot flushes, not being able to sleep, et cetera. And they also just come out of the blue in the same way that a wave of anxiety can just come out of the blue, or leg cramps can just come out of the blue, you know, whatever physical changes that you have. And that can take you off guard. And obviously all of these things, unless you're really prepared and very comfortable and okay with it, can absolutely play havoc on people's mental health.
Absolutely. You know, I just, when you're kind of explaining that and the anxiety and just like the mood changes and everything, like, so this is what I've been thinking about. If it's women of a certain age that get slapped this kind of title or label as a Karen when they're just middle-aged, stressed out. And I think in some cases you have every right to ask for the manager, but I feel like our age category now is kind of like hesitant to do that, because it's like, well, no one's going to take me seriously because they're going to just like say, oh my God, she's being such a Karen, you know? And I think that really has to do with a lot of like perimenopause, menopause. Again, I just want to stress, not the extreme cases of people like jumping on people in parks and telling them they're not allowed to be there. But, anyway, what do you think? What's your thought process on that?
I think that one of the things that happens is, you know, as women, we go through life and we are nurturers, you know, by nature, we are nurturers. And when we get to this particular perimenopause, menopause phase of life, that leaves us. And we've devoted so much time to caring for others, and all of a sudden the only person that we're interested in caring about is ourselves. And so we start to become a little more vocal, a little more aware, and a little more vocal about what we're prepared to tolerate and what we're not prepared to tolerate. Yeah. And I think that might be what plays into, oh, you know, what you've kind of suggested. She's, you know, really trying to be very difficult, not go along for the ride. She's not, you know, going to do just what we tell her to do.
Yeah.
I think that that's where that comes from. I personally have found that particular journey extremely empowering, not really caring what other people think anymore.
Yeah.
And that journey has led me to be able to step back and really consider whether things are my problem or are not my problem, and whether I want to devote energy to them or whether I don't want to devote energy to them. And that is so incredibly freeing. One of the things that often we talk about in counseling is, what would your life look like if that anxiety, that worry, that stress, that sadness, if you took it out? And when you think about that in this context of having been this nurturer for your whole life and caring about everybody else's needs and putting everybody else before you put yourself, and then all of a sudden you don't feel like you have to do that anymore and you don't really understand why. Sure, your kids have probably grown up and they're moving out, etc., but there's also a biological thing that's going on that's stopping that. It can be really liberating, extremely freeing. And I think that's one of the things that helps women come into their own in this phase of life.
Do you think some women also feel a sense of loss in that then?
100%. If you're prepared to let it go and run with it. And there's initial hesitation, obviously, because there's a grieving process. And if you look at the definition of grief, it's really just the loss of something. You're never going to get it back the way that it was before. So it's not necessarily the death of a person. It's the ending of something, the loss of something that is never going to come back in the way that it was before. So for a lot of people women whose lives have been about taking care of the family, looking after other people, taking care of the kids, and all of a sudden they find that that's not there, or they can see they're staring down the barrel of that not going to be there anymore, it can be really, really unsettling. And that in itself is a transition that many women find very difficult. I encourage people to be okay with accepting that that's a hard change, and be okay with sitting in that for as long as you need to, but also be okay with looking at it and saying, yeah, I'm saying goodbye to that and I loved it. But look at all these things over here that I can do now that I didn't have the time for before, I didn't have the energy for before, or that can be about me. And you people, I love you to death, and I obviously want to keep you in my life, but it's a little bit of time for me over here now.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess too, when you're saying like, I still want to keep you in my life, maybe in some cases it's like, I also don't want to keep you in my life.
Yeah.
Which brings me to, like, this is really interesting. So I've been trying to focus on like researching each guest I have. I try to research a little bit of background for our conversation. And the one thing that I came about, which I found was really interesting. And so Psychology Today had this article that talks about your cortisol levels, where your body stores your fat, right? And it's about your like stress levels, and that when you get rid of stress, or which can include toxic relationships, I found this interesting, that people can just, I definitely don't want to turn this conversation or any conversation I ever have, I don't want to talk about like women like losing weight, because I kind of feel like that is a negative. I mean, sometimes the results are a positive, but it drives me crazy when you see all these Instagram ads of sad about your waistline, want to do this, want to do that. And it's obviously targeting like middle-aged women. It pisses me off because it's just like, we're not a target market, so stop selling this bullshit to us. But I just think about, you know, when I divorced my first husband, and I didn't diet or like anything, like I lost a ton of weight, you know, and it just made me think of that when I read that article, but how much of that could be in relation to, just our stress levels.
Our cortisol levels increase as we start to go through perimenopause and menopause, and that is a direct response of the estrogen and the progesterone dropping. I think that when you are under a lot of stress, your cortisol levels increase because it is by definition the stress hormone. So that happens naturally. And when your cortisol levels increase, all sorts of things happen. You can't think clearly. Your energy levels drop. You go into fight, flight, or freeze mode.
I find too that, you know, another thing that kind of puts us in a, you know, I don't know if it's stress or what the right emotion would be, but social media, I find. I mean, social media could be great. It could be such like a nice place where we can like find information, but it could also be a negative just from some of the messaging that is out there. I know for myself, like every once in a while I go through, and maybe not everybody knows this, but especially on Instagram, because I'm always on it. You can go into your settings and you can put in certain keywords so it blocks certain conversations. So I've gone through and I've done that. But what's your kind of perspective and how it affects us social or like from social media and on a mental health perspective?
I personally try and stay off it as much as possible. I don't encourage, you know, doom scrolling, which is, I guess, what they call it a lot now, because first of all, it's not food for the brain. It's literally just draining you of energy. You're looking at things that take away from who you are and fill your head with emptiness. You know, it's the junk food of connection. Social media, we should be more connected via social media, but we're actually less connected globally than we've ever been before because we don't talk to our neighbors anymore. I think people, when they use it, spend so much time comparing themselves to others. And I know that that sounds, you know, completely okay. Well, yeah, I'm not an idiot. I guess, you know, everybody knows that that's what they're doing. But I don't think that people actually really understand the saying that comparison is the thief of joy. And it has taken me a long time to really truly understand what that means and accept that, you know, looking at something else and comparing what somebody else has to what I have or what I don't have, which I can so easily do now on social media, takes away from my happiness.
It's true. You're right. It, you know, it's unfortunate too, because most people are only posting the great things about them or the fabricated things about them. It's like advertising, right? So advertising is there to kind of set aspirations. It's like selling this fictional life. They want you to want it, you know, so that's the same thing. And it's unfortunate that people are not more honest about it. But honest won't get you followers necessarily. I mean, maybe in some cases, and honesty definitely won't get you paid for collaborations from beauty brands or lifestyle brands. Like, they want to see that kind of advertising, which is, yeah, which is funny, because that also has influenced my industry and how much work comes in. And it's so interesting. So on my job yesterday, and this woman comes over and is talking to the other hairstylist and I, and she was saying, oh, my hair is like, the texture's really changed. I, you know, it doesn't like how it's turning out. Like, and then this other hairstylist said to her, well, where are you getting your information? Because she was saying that she was using some sort of stripping agent on her hair. And he's like, who's telling you to do this? And she's like, oh, I got the information from TikTok. Right. And we were both like, no, and it was just hair. Like, it's not like necessarily mental health. Although if your hair is not great, that can affect your mental health too, right? But it was like, stop getting your information from social media.
Yeah. And look, I do love it for the point of view of being able to see something like a snippet of a podcast, for example, which I can look at and say, oh, I'd find that interesting, and that's going to teach me something. And therefore, you know, I want to listen to that podcast and I want to learn more. I also don't watch the news so anymore, because I find that that is just emotionally draining and doesn't serve a purpose for me. That's one of my mental health tricks.
That's a good one. I also stop watching the news. Like, why? Like, you leave feeling, or not leave, but like turn off the TV or the computer, whatever, feeling like stressed about what's going on.
Yeah.
What do you think are some symptoms that someone might be experiencing for mental health as they're going through perimenopause and menopause?
Certainly confusion And I think confusion is one of the big things, because you can typically deal with anything if you can understand it and you know what's going on. You can put it into context. But because things are going up and down and coming at you when you least expect it, and one day you feel great and the next day you don't, and so then some people can start to question their sanity as well as question their health, their physical health, you know, all sorts of different changes. Maybe you used to be really super effective at work, but some brain fog's kicking in and you can't make decisions the way that you used to. You might find yourself walking down the street thinking, I'm going to go and buy X, Y, and Z, and then getting there and feeling overwhelmed by choice for no apparent reason. I think that that's one of the big things that people don't understand what's going on. The anxiety that comes in is another really, really big one. And questioning how we show up when we get to that state. How do we want to show up? Is anybody going to listen to me? Is anybody going to be interested in the wisdom I've gained? Does anybody care? All of those questions, which can lead to a huge amount of self-doubt, which can lead to, you know, really feeling very sad, quite depressed, very anxious.
What would be a red flag for someone that they would think like, oh, I should really like seek some help on this?
I think if you're in a space where the things that you used to enjoy doing, you no longer enjoy doing, and you find them to be a chore and not something that you're keen to get out of bed and tackle, or if you find yourself frequently crying and frequently feeling so overwhelmed that you can't leave the house or you can't get out of the car if you've driven to the shopping center, or, you know, any of those almost paralyzing feelings, they definitely should seek mental health help. I also think, you know, in the space where people are really questioning, how do I navigate life now that I'm in this phase? How do I now actively be comfortable to say I'm choosing me, and I'm happy and proud to choose me, and when I'm choosing me, I'm looking for who I want to be and what I want to do. I think for a lot of women, that's extremely overwhelming because they've never done it before. You know, counseling can be really helpful for that.
I love that. I'm choosing me. I think that's great.
Yeah. I think if they're not sleeping, because that can be a real thing, and a prolonged period of no sleep can really affect your mental health. And that may be not only a trip to a counselor, but also a trip to a GP or a naturopath, or, you know, something that can help to start to facilitate sleep again. Sleep's one of the big things. If you can't sleep, you can't think, you can't exercise, you can't eat properly, like it really ticks over on everything. And I think too, in the same way as people say, if you think you have an alcohol problem, if you think you have a mental health problem, you probably do, and it doesn't hurt to go and see somebody, even if it's just for one or two sessions. You know, maybe you just need a bit of a recalibration, a sanity check. Am I okay? Are these things normal? Is it okay that I'm feeling this way? I think that rule sort of applies as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I this is where I feel like my podcast and these conversations and other podcasts like that are quite similar, maybe having similar conversations that people can listen to and kind of think like that, like this is normal. But I guess there's also, you know, that line in the sand where it's like, you know, it could be normal, but then if it's a bit more on the extreme, that's when seeking help is great. You know, I've spent so much time of my life going through like counseling and therapy and stuff just because of my childhood. And I'm like, I'm such an advocate for mental health help. You know, the other thing that I was reading about recently is sleep divorce. And it's usually married couples that after a certain amount of time of being together, they still love each other. They're not looking to get divorced, but they either sleep in separate beds in the same room or they sleep in separate bedrooms. And that concept is about getting better sleep, and better sleep like reduces your anxiety, reduces your blood pressure, which I understand because my blood pressure goes really high when my husband's snoring beside me and keeping me awake.
I think everyone's does.
Yeah. Side note, I slept in the guest room last night at 2 o'clock in the morning. I was like, I remember in Singapore going to look at one house and the master bedroom had two single beds. And I remember thinking, what kind of marriage is that? Like, that's ridiculous. Two single bed. Like, automatically I start judging their marriage, right? And then I have a client who also, or had a client, it was one of my clients in Singapore. Her and her husband slept in separate bedrooms for years. It never even occurred to me. And I think maybe that's because it's portrayed, you know, in movies and in like sitcoms in the 50s, like this is what we do, you know, but yeah. So just what you were saying, just like sleep is one of the big things that we need for, I guess, so many things, right?
Yeah, we really do. And I think, you know, there is more awareness being brought to this topic. And I think that, you know, if it can be viewed as an opportunity to shift direction, move forward, have a bit of a new and a different experience and see it as a positive thing, I'm all for it. And it means I can just kind of get along and do what I want to do and do what I need to do and be on my own terms. And no one, I don't care anymore, A, if people are judging me. So maybe they are judging me and I'm not paying attention to it. But I do feel like that a lot of women start to feel invisible at this age. And is it because we're at this age or is it because they don't care anymore? I don't know. But whatever way, it's working for me. I found some of the social media around this phase of life can be a little forceful. We need to talk about menopause, you know, and we do. But I don't know that I necessarily personally want it in my face at that level. You know, I do want awareness, and I do think that women should feel free to talk about it with whomever they choose to talk about it. It doesn't mean they need to talk about it to everybody. I wouldn't talk about all of the things I do in my life to everybody. Why do I need to talk about this to everybody?
You know, it's so true. And I think, like, this was one of my inspirations of doing the podcast, because I was just so tired of seeing all this messaging online. And again, I agree that we definitely need to talk about it. But the sales pitches, like the buy this vitamin, use this like sweet potato cream, like it's just kind of like, oh my God, stop. And then also to your point about like, we don't need to talk about it with everybody. I have never had a hot flash. Now I have an IUD because my gynecologist in Singapore, before I moved back to Canada, said you should get the Marina IUD fresh. Because it's got, I think it has estrogen in it. Again, I'm also not a doctor, but she said it'll help with symptoms. Mm-hmm. So, and I always think it's funny using the word symptoms with menopause, like it's an illness, but it's, I guess there's no other like term to use. But anyway, so I've never had a hot flash. This is not a brag. This is just like a fact, right? And I guess not every woman gets them anyway. But I was on set and a male photographer, I don't remember the context, but he made some joke at me saying something about hot flashes. And it kind of took me back a little bit because I also kind of thought like, A, that's completely inappropriate. And then it's also like, you're making some sort of like joke about my age. And this is a professional setting. So why? I mean, my industry tends to be very relaxed. A lot of things that we talk about or say or whatever. But I think, again, there is that, you know, division of like what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, and definitely making some smart ass comment about one of your crew, like having a hot flash or whatever it was. It was just like, oh, so frustrating.
And I think too, you know, people forget that there are women who go into this phase of life because they have to surgically, right? So they have to have a hysterectomy for whatever reason. And they're therefore forced down this route before they ordinarily would have been, and it happens very suddenly. So they've got a whole other set of issues to deal with, because it's not something that, you know, it may or may not have been explained properly to them when they were told that they needed to have a hysterectomy, what was going to happen. And not only are they trying to recover from surgery and feeling like they've had, you know, a good chunk of their body removed from them and grieving that loss, then they're also all of a sudden thrown into menopause and they've got all these swings going on, and maybe hormone replacement therapy works for them, maybe it doesn't. But I don't think that when anybody is joking, in inverted commas, about symptoms or challenges that women face in this phase of life, I don't think people typically consider that population of person, and they don't offer support so much to that particular population of women. You know, for those women who are receiving social media messages from people trying to sell this cream and that cream, and, you know, they're probably sitting there thinking, well, I would have gladly used this cream or that cream if I wasn't in this position that I'm in today because of health reasons that I had to go down this road. You know, I don't think that any of that is kind of factored into it.
Yeah. I also think too that that when we're seeing all these like sales like pushed at us for like buying various creams and vitamins and whatever, I think that we need to remember to maybe not get sucked into those sales and go see your GP, or if you're seeing a menopause specialist. And I love Dr. Jen Gunter for all this stuff too, because she also says like, see who is selling the product. It's padding their pocketbooks versus necessarily helping. So we really have to trust who we're, you know, getting that medical advice from.
And it's preying on people's vulnerability, which is obviously, you know, the whole point, which goes back to the point of, if you are feeling vulnerable, if you are feeling unsure, try and get some help, whether that's from a medical professional, ask some questions, or whether if you feel like you just need a couple of sessions with a counselor or even a group therapy session, or, you know, anything along those lines, go talk to somebody, share what's going on for you in terms of the vulnerability, get it out there, talk about it so that you're not feeling pressured.
Yes, absolutely. So this is like all such great like information and shares. And I feel like we're great. I have one more question. And then of course, if there's anything else you feel like you want to add, like, absolutely. But aside from like seeking professional help, do you have any kind of coping suggestions that you give to, you know, whether it's your friends or whether it's like people that you see in sessions? And, you know, some people unfortunately will also never seek mental health because they just don't, they're embarrassed by it or whatever. And hey, also like to those people, I want to say like, please don't be embarrassed about it. Like it's always like a confidential thing when you see a mental health expert. Yeah. And it can really, really help you. Like I literally started seeing a mental health expert when I think I was in grade 8, so whatever that age that makes you. And I'm turning 54 this Sunday.
Woo-hoo. Happy birthday.
I know. Not looking forward to that. But anyway, back to you, Allison. Do you have any like coping suggestions you have for people?
Yeah, I mean, sleep is definitely one. Making sure you're getting a good night's sleep is definitely one, you know, as often as you can. Physical activity is another one. So whatever type of exercise it is that works for you and however much you think you can do, like don't set yourself up for failure. If you say to yourself, I'm going to go for a walk for an hour every day, and you know that's not achievable, then don't set that as your target. You know, set the target as what it is that you think you are actually capable of doing and work towards that. I think, you know, relaxation techniques, breathing techniques, meditation, yoga, Pilates, whatever it is that floats your boat around, you know, those types of things. Breathing techniques, I think, are wonderful. You can actually, you know, really short circuit a negative thinking pattern just by starting to breathe and letting it go, you know, actively imagining it leaving your head. We can really get into negative thinking patterns when the hormones are going up and down. And, you know, all of a sudden some little minor irritation has turned into, I'm the worst person on the planet and why would anybody ever care about me? You know, and that transition takes about 13, maybe 14 seconds. So if you can sort of imagine those negative things leaving your brain, actually picturing that happen, I think is a really good tool. Trying to limit the stresses that are in your life. So if you know that there's somebody or something that causes you to be stressed, try not to be involved with that. because you know your priority is to look after yourself as much as you possibly can, and you're no good to anybody else unless you've looked after yourself. So if, you know, going to the post office and standing in line for 2 hours causes you stress and you're already feeling anxious on that particular day, put it off. The world's not going to end, you know? Like, actually take a little bit of time for self-care. Be compassionate to yourself when you are feeling overwhelmed. Acknowledge that you're feeling overwhelmed. Acknowledge that all these things are coming at you and it's not your fault. And it's okay. And it's okay to stand there and say, I'm going to be kind to myself today because I'm not a bad human. It's just that these things are happening right now.
There's a TV show that just launched here called Small Achievable Goals. And it's all about perimenopause and menopause. And the two women that are behind it are, you know, comedy. I think they're comedians and actors. I think that really kind of fits in with what you're saying too. Like, if you can't make that 1 hour walk that you're promising yourself, and I'm wondering to kind of maybe start getting into the habit, maybe each morning, instead of like saying like this week, every day I'm doing this, maybe you just get those small achievable goals in the morning. You wake up in the morning and you're like, today I'm going to do a 10-minute walk.
Yeah.
You know, or today I'm going to go to the post office. But I like your suggestion of like, if you get somewhere and you're just not feeling it. And I honestly have done this before. I just turn my car around. I'm like, you know what? I'm just not gonna do that.
But I think the trick there with that is to not beat yourself up about it when you do it. Like, it's not a case of, I'm just going to turn my car around and go home and feel defeated.
Yeah.
Owning it, you know, I couldn't do it today and that's okay. And I think that's the problem, is people don't come at it with that attitude. They come at it with the attitude, oh, I'm so hopeless, I couldn't even go to the post office. And that's that negative mindset again, as opposed to, this is not my fault. I'm going through things and I'm doing the best I can. I did not wake up today with the plan in my head of being the second best version of myself. I woke up today with the plan in my head of doing the best I can, and that's what I do. I'm doing the best I can.
I guess when you have those negative thoughts coming into your head where you're feeling defeated, you can just use that that saying, which I don't even know where it came from, but it's like, not today, Satan, not today.
I don't know where that one came from.
It's probably like from a movie or like maybe like, I don't know, Saturday Night Live or something. I don't know. It's just so funny.
Yeah, I have no idea. For some women, hormone replacement therapy works. That's a medical thing though. Like, it's, I think that really does help for some women. And that's an individual choice for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it, you know, with what your doctor says as well. I met a woman on a photo shoot who was like in this age category. And she said that she chose not to take any medication, no hormones or anything. And she said it was a bit of a roller coaster, but she soldiered on and she came out the other side and she's like perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I'm also not a medical doctor, so I don't know it, but it was just interesting having these conversations with people and just hearing kind of what their choices were. You know, I've been on like estrogen cream, which I found like it didn't do anything for me, but again, I have this IUD, so maybe it's not necessarily necessary anyway. And then I've been given progesterone recently, and honestly, I stopped taking it because I kind of like, I'm like, I don't see any changes. Like, you know, and I don't know, like I'm sure doctors hate me because even, you know, for, I have an autoimmune disorder and they're like, have you been taking your medication? It's like, well, I was for like a month, and they're like, you got to keep doing it. You can't just like not take it. Like,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have one more thought and then we should wrap this up.
Okay.
Earlier when you were just talking about like the demons and like the thought process and everything and like things that kind of stop you and just even doing this podcast, right? I was saying to my husband one day, I think after the second episode aired, and I was like, I said to him, like, who the fuck do I think I am? Like, starting a podcast, like, nobody's going to fucking listen to it. You know, I just kind of went off on my little kind of like, you know, downward spiral of like, why am I doing this? Like, no one's going to like it, you know, whatever. And then the next day, a listener sent me a really, really lovely message about how they feel validated, how they feel. And I just kind of think like one person sent me this nice message. And I remember from years ago when I used to do this TV show, my friend Karen, who was the second guest, I remember her saying to me, and back then people would mail letters, but she said, for every one person that said something, I honestly don't remember what her numbers were, but it was like for every one person that says something, there's like a bunch of them behind. But she said, people that have negative things to say, they'll all like jump forward, which I guess shows you that kind of in the trolls in social media, you know, you see more negative comments than positive.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, right? The bad stuff is easier to believe, which I think is a line out of Pretty Woman, but it's so true. We can tell ourselves stories in our heads, and we can tell ourselves a story of you suck. Why would anybody listen to you? You know, why would anybody interested in anything that you have to say? You can equally tell yourself you're awesome. Of course, people are going to listen to me. I'm actually wise. I've spent a lot of time doing a whole bunch of really interesting things that people might care about. It's the same. Telling yourself a negative thing is the same as telling yourself a positive thing, but we all automatically go towards telling ourselves a negative thing. And we get stuck on it and we believe it. And that's another piece that I think that people need to work on. And I also want to throw in there, if it's making you happy and you're enjoying it, who cares?
Oh my God, I love that. Yeah.
Like, honestly.
Yeah.
Who cares? If you're loving doing it, go ahead and do it.
That's a really great note to end on. I would love, I mean, I have so many more things. Like, I have two pages printed out. But Allison, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for the opportunity. I was really curious to do this, like really curious to do it because I've not done it before. So I hope I did okay.
You did amazing. And I love, there's so many, like as we're chatting, I'm like some of the things that you said, I'm like, oh, thank that. Not only for like sharing, but also for myself.
Yeah. Well, you can book a session whenever you like.
Yeah. Thank you. I feel like I'm definitely guilty of like that negative conversation in my head, and I definitely need to spin it to the positive. I think I need to work on that,
which is not easy to do. It takes practice. It really does take practice, and it takes not being frightened of what might be on the other side if you let go of the negative, because people get really frightened of it, because if there's no negative, there's no reason to not do the thing anymore,
right?
And then they're like, well, shit, if I do the thing, what if it fails? So what? It fails, you know, like it, but people don't do it. It's really hard.
It is really hard.
Thanks for tuning in to the Fuck You 50s. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate the podcast. And we'd love to connect with you on Instagram. So be sure to follow us at the Fuck You 50s. The Fuck You 50s is hosted by Andrea Clare and edited and produced by Bespoke Productions Hub. See you next time.